Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the October NJEDA board meeting. At this time, all phone participants are in a listen-only mode. Please be advised today's meeting is being recorded. When the chairman opens to the public or public comments portion of the meeting, members of the public attending by phone will be advised to press 1 then 0 on your telephone keypad to be placed in queue to speak and provide comments. You will be asked to provide your name and any organization with which you are affiliated. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the number. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then 0. I would now like to turn the conference over to Chairman Kevin Quinn. Please go ahead.
Thank you, operator. I'd like to call the meeting to order. Tim, if you could read the open public meeting notice.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. In accordance with the Open Public Meeting Act, notice this meeting has been sent to the Star Ledger and the Times and Trent at least 48 hours prior to this meeting, and a meeting notice has been posted on the Secretary of State's bulletin board at the Department of State. Pursuant to the Internal Revenue Code of 1986, as amended, this is a public hearing and comments are invited on any private activity bond projects presented today.
Thank you, Tim. Manera, could we do a roll call?
Chairman Kevin Quinn.
Present.
Vice Chairman Tom Farlow.
Here.
Bob Shimko.
Here.
Marcia Marley.
Here.
Aisha Glover.
Present.
Phil Elagia. Fred Dumont. Commissioner Rob Angelo from the Department of Labor.
Here. Present.
Commissioner Marlene Caridi from Banking.
Present.
Elizabeth Dragon for Commissioner Sean LaSarette from DEP.
Here.
State Treasurer Elizabeth Moyo.
Here.
Noreen Giblin.
I'm Kevin.
Here.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Great. Thank you, Manera.
Manera, Fred Dumont. I'm sorry I logged in late.
Okay. Good morning, Fred.
Thank you. Good morning.
All right. Good morning, everyone. We have one set of meeting minutes for approval today. These are the September 14th EDA annual board meeting for review and approval. Again, as a practice in this hybrid setting, please state your name when making a motion or a second. Can I get a motion to approve the September 14th board meeting minutes?
So moved, Angelo.
Can I get a second?
Second, Fred Dumont.
Thank you, Fred. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, I have some brief remarks this morning. The governor's and legislature's commitment to key economic development sectors is evidenced by over $400 million in state appropriations allocated to the EDA in the fiscal 2023 budget to support new, innovative, and transformative programs. This funding is intended to support several critical large-scale economic development programs that will have a major impact on the state's economy for years to come. Part of that state funding includes $35 million for a manufacturing initiative. The first such initiative, the New Jersey Manufacturer Voucher Program, will be presented today for your approval. This program that we affectionately call MVP is a proposed $20 million program that, if approved by the board, would help to bolster the state's manufacturing sector by spurring capital investment, expanding high-quality manufacturing jobs and training opportunities, encouraging new manufacturing technologies, attracting new manufacturers and suppliers. You will also be asked today to approve another new program to be implemented by the New Jersey EDA, with the creation of the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation Initiative, known as ARC, which will reactivate and revitalize commercial corridors in commuter hub cities in the wake of COVID-19. The program will be funded with $10 million in American Rescue Plan coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds, plus $5 million from the New Jersey Department of Community Affairs, and $5 million from the Casino Redevelopment Authority. Based on the board's review and action today, these are just a couple examples of the strategic and impactful programs the EDA intends to be developed in the coming months with the support and confidence of Governor Murphy and the legislature. Thank you. Tim?
Mr. Chairman, September into early October has been quite a sprint, not surprisingly, given this time of year and everything we have on our plate. A couple things I'll highlight you have in your written report as well. Very, very active kind of outreach and sort of public engagement menu of activities in the last couple of weeks. We had the Governor's Conference on Housing and Economic Development, which we did in partnership with DCA and HMFA and NJRA and the Governor's Office down in Atlantic City. A couple days later, we had a Clean Energy Conference put on by BPU, also in Atlantic City. We had Propelify last week up in Hoboken, which a number of us were at, telling the sort of tech and innovation story. There was a manufacturing day or Made in New Jersey Day as part of the New Jersey MEP program, apropos of our what we'll hear about from Ivan in a few minutes, really successful 1,000-person conference at over in Freehold on Friday of last week. There was a major child care industry convening that our team presented at. So you know, out there, pounding the pavement, telling the story, drumming up interest in and awareness of the various and many programs we have underway. A couple other major milestones on some specific programs. The Evergreen Fund program, and there's not a board item on this today. There will be, I believe, in December. But we closed the first, the inaugural auction of tax credits under the governor's signature innovation economy proposal, the Innovation Evergreen Fund. We had initially gone out with a pilot auction of $30 million based on demand. We upsized that to $50. And when we closed the books at midnight on Friday night, that was a little more than $64 million of demand, so oversubscribed even at the higher number. When we're a strong indication of the corporate community's really strong support for the Innovation Evergreen Fund specifically and the innovation economy broadly. Remember, we're auctioning tax credits to corporate taxpayers. We'll take the proceeds, once approved by this board, take the proceeds and pair those with real venture capital dollars to invest in New Jersey startups or companies that wish to come here and become New Jersey startups. So a real game changer from an innovation economy perspective and inverting a bit how we think about using tax credits to support small companies and growing, rapidly growing companies. So a big win that we had 10 applications for, again, a little more than $64 million. So it's a combination of celebration and a bit of a sigh of relief from how that inaugural auction went. We also had a really successful launch of the new microbusiness loan program on Thursday. Nearly 2,000 applications came in. It's a $20 million program. Funded through the Main Street initiative in the governor's budget, as well as the Economic Recovery Act. Again, so nearly 2,000 applicants came in, more than 50% self-identify as minority-owned, 35% identify as woman-owned, a little less than 2% identify as veteran-owned. So when we talk about targeting micro-businesses, one of the reasons we do that is because something like 90% of all minority-owned, or at least Black and Latino-owned businesses in New Jersey are some form of micro-business. So really important targeting and sort of a real sort of an incredibly important part of Governor Murphy's inclusive economic growth strategy there. We also announced we've made tremendous progress in some of the other Main Street programs with more than $13 million approvals under the Improvement Grant Program, which has been a really popular program. And so, you know, working hard to get these badly needed funds on the street, hitting the real economy, particularly parts of the economy that are still struggling coming out of the worst of COVID-19. We also, just one other thing we launched was a food desert planning grant program, a food insecurity planning grant program. This is part of Governor Murphy's commitment around food security, fighting food insecurity, making more food security. As part of our planning grant programs, this is sort of a forerunner to or precursor to another program we'll be back to later this year around the food desert tax credit program, but providing some funds directly to municipalities through some of the funds that the governor and legislature include in the budget to do planning, to get ready for that kind of program and make, you know, targeted investments in food security initiatives. So, you know, again, across the gamut from, you know, big companies and innovation to food security to micro businesses, we are out there working hard, pushing a number of various, you know, program initiatives that I think represent well Governor Murphy's commitment to both a comprehensive approach to economic development and an inclusive approach to economic development. So it's been busy, more coming down the pike. In terms of other new programs we'll be back to this board with, but we also have an action-packed agenda today. It's not the longest agenda we've ever had in terms of number of items, but some really chunky, important new initiatives here. So with that, I'm happy to take any questions, but we'll shut up and yield the floor back to you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you, Tim. first items on the agenda are policy committee related. The chair is a policy committee. Just a few highlights.
We've got a number of MOUs, an MOU between the BPU and the EDA to support the development and delivery of workforce training, education, research, innovation programs to assist New Jerseyans in participating in the offshore wind industry. We have the third round of clean energy MOUs between the EDA and BPU and the EDA and CSIT to provide additional funding for the Clean Tech Seed Grant Program, the Clean Tech Research and Development Voucher Program, and a new Clean Tech Pilot Demonstration Program. You'll learn more about each of these shortly. The last item here is the ART Program using coronavirus state and local fiscal recovery funds appropriation to support a one-time grant opportunity that will assist the economic recovery in urban areas with mass transit that have faced economic harms from the reduction of commuters due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And the creation of the New Jersey Manufacturers Voucher Program, or MVP, a pilot program that will provide New Jersey manufacturers a grant to access equipment they need to become more efficient, productive, and profitable. And I will jump ahead. Jenny Bauer is our chair of the Incentives Committee, is not with us this morning. I will, and as a member of that committee, there's two items worth noting. We have our first approval under the Historic Preservation Plan for the Lowe's Theater in Jersey City, which is a landmark historic structure in Jersey City. And then we also have the approval of the Brownfield Redevelopment Program Rules, which is another exciting program that we have here at the EDA. So I will jump into our first item, which is the Wind Institute for Innovation and Training Memorandum, or MOU, New Jersey EDA and New Jersey BPU. Jen Becker, Managing Director, Wind Institute, presenting. Thank you, Jen. Go ahead.
Thank you so much. Good morning. The members were asked to approve an MOU between the New Jersey Board of Public Utilities and NJEDA for the BPU to provide $10 million in funding to EDA for Wind Institute-related programs. This is the third time that EDA and BPU have entered into such an agreement. In 2020 and 2021, BPU provided EDA with $4.5 million and $7 million, respectively, via these MOUs. With that funding, EDA has advanced several initiatives to spearhead offshore wind workforce training, education, research, and innovation. These programs include grant challenges to create a global wind organization, basic safety and sea survival facility, wind turbine technician training programs, and most recently, the Offshore Wind Workforce and Skills Development Grant Challenge. We've also established the Wind Institute Fellowship and university initiatives to advance offshore wind, establishing MOUs with vocational schools to expand their welding and painting programs, with a series of offshore wind workforce and industry engagements for small businesses and stakeholders to learn more about the offshore wind supply chain, commissioned a workforce gap analysis, and conducting a feasibility study to identify the need for offshore wind research and testing facility in New Jersey. This additional $10 million in funding from this MOU will support continued development and execution of offshore wind workforce and education programs, include the expansion of the Wind Institute Fellowship and University Initiatives, development and execution of initiatives that spearhead research and innovation that unlocks market potential, or specifically addresses challenges facing the New Jersey offshore wind industry. There is one clarifying edit that we'll be making to the MOU that clarifies that this funding will not cover Wind Institute overhead or administrative costs. The MOU has a term of 5 years and includes requirements for EDA staff to continue to regularly engage and provide the BPU staff with quarterly updates on the status of these programs and initiatives. In summary, the board is asked to approve entering into an MOU with BPU for BPU to provide EDA with $10 million in funding to support Wind Institute-related programming for offshore wind workforce development, education, research, and innovation initiatives. Thank you.
Great. Do you have any questions for Jen? There's no questions for Jen. Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Liz. Can I get a second?
Angelo, second.
Thank you, Rob. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. The opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Jen.
Thank you so much.
All right, the next item. The third round of clean energy MOUs between the
EDA and the BPU and the EDA and New Jersey Commission on Science, Innovation, and Technology, or CSIT. Alex Hedren, Clean Energy Manager, presenting. Alex.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. The members of the board are being asked to approve two MOUs in order to facilitate the allocation of funding from BPU to support continued funding of CSIT clean tech programs. The first MOU is between EDA and BPU for EDA to receive $3.6 million in BPU funds to support CSIT's programs. The second MOU is between EDA and CSIT to allocate $3.42 million of those BPU funds to CSIT to deploy their clean tech programs, with 5% of the funds being retained by EDA to cover administrative, personnel, and overhead costs in running those programs. This will be the third time that EDA and BPU and CSIT have entered into MOUs like this in order to facilitate allocation of funds to CSIT's programs. In 2020 and 2021, BPU provided EDA $1.25 million and $2.5 million, respectively, in fundings through MOUs. And in concert with those MOUs, EDA entered into MOUs with CSIT to allocate $1.187 million and a little over $2 million to CSIT to directly support their programs. In both of those previous places, just like this one, EDA retained 5% of the BPU funds to cover those administrative costs, similar to this these MOUs. To date, CSIT has utilized BPU funds to launch two rounds of clean tech seed grant programs with a combined budget of over $2 million and two rounds of clean tech research and development voucher programs with a combined budget of almost $500,000. This new round of MOUs will provide additional funding to support EDA and CSIT's work to strengthen the clean tech and clean energy innovation ecosystem in New Jersey. Their program funds, combined with approximately $850,000 of unused funds being rolled over from previous MOUs, are intended to support three specific clean tech programs in coordination with CSIT. First, it would support the launch of third phase of the clean tech seed grant program. It would also add additional funds to the rolling clean tech R&D voucher program, and about $1.25 million of the funds would be used to launch a new clean tech pilot demonstration program to support early stage clean tech and clean energy companies in New Jersey to accelerate commercialization and deployment of innovative clean tech, clean energy technologies by providing funding for pilot demonstration projects to test and validate technologies and their performance and de-risk the commercialization process. The estimated budgets are indicative and not final. CSIT is in continuous consultation with EDA and BPU should they need to reallocate any funds between those programs or any yet-to-be-designed programs based on demand. The MOU with BPU includes a requirement for EDA staff to engage and update BPU quarterly on program status. Similarly, the MOU with CSIT includes requirements for CSIT to engage with EDA and BPU quarterly on status as well. Again, this memo is to request the board to approve these two MOUs, one with BPU and one with CSIT, in order to allocate funding for CSIT's clean tech programs. Thank you.
Do we have any questions for Alex? Alex, I just have one question. Given the underutilization of the first two MOUs, I think you mentioned $850,000 being rolled over, and those allocations for those prior two MOUs were smaller than the 3.6, I believe you said today. Are we doing anything to help promote, create more awareness around that so it's a more fully utilized program than it's been to date?
Yeah, I mean, I think CSIT is always working on expanding its networking and marketing of the products. I think to explain some of the $850,000 that was unspent, some of it was due to the structure of the awards. For instance, the seed grant awardees were announced in, I believe, July to the CSIT board and approved. They actually weren't able to issue all of the awards based on a couple of, you know, almost like legal discrepancies that they're still working out. So that there is a portion of that, you know, bucket of money that they were not able to distribute. Not to say there weren't a lot of really excited applicants. There were over, you know, there were numerous applicants that didn't meet all the thresholds. So I think CSIT is continuing to work with those applicants to bolster their, you know, their products and their applications for future applications, so they can really leverage all of the funding.
Okay, great. Thank you. Any other questions for Alex? If we have no other questions for Alex, can I get a motion to approve?
Motion.
Thank you, Robert. Can I get a second?
Second.
Maureen, thank you. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Alex.
We'll work on tonight's thank you notes to President Pierre Lisa for the money that be viewed.
All right. Next item is the use of coronavirus state local fiscal recovery funds appropriation for the creation of the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation ART program. Stick with ART. Emma Corrado, Chief of Staff, presenting. Emma.
Thank you. The board is asked to approve the creation of the Activation, Revitalization, and Transformation ART program, which utilizes American Rescue Plan, state and local fiscal recovery funds, SLFRF, to establish a one-time grant opportunity to assist New Jersey municipalities that have suffered economic harms from the reduction of commuters due to COVID-19 through real estate development and public space activation projects. Funded at $10 million, the ART program requires the EDA to enter into two memorandums of understanding, one with the New Jersey Department of Community Affairs and one with the New Jersey Casino Reinvestment Development Authority, each for $5 million of SLFRF funds. Outlined in Governor Murphy's budget in brief and appropriated by the New Jersey JBOC last November, ART utilizes federal funds to reactivate and revitalize commercial corridors in the wake of COVID-19. Commercial corridors play a vital role in both urban and rural geographies, serving as economic engines for communities by keeping jobs and providing money through a local economy, offering goods and services, empowering entrepreneurship, as well as wealth building. Prior to COVID-19, economic shifts adversely impacted commercial corridors, resulting in uneven growth and high vacancy rates, especially for corridors located in low-income communities. The pandemic further amplified these hardships, as many of the businesses hit hardest by the pandemic are also the ones that populate and contribute to the ecosystem of the commercial corridor, with Black and brown-owned businesses proving to be exceptionally vulnerable. This, combined with the mass transition remote work, has resulted in decreased capacity, foot traffic, and revenue across economically vital commercial corridors. To mitigate the impact of COVID-19 and support the development and recovery of New Jersey's commuter hub cities, the ART program will invest in the infrastructure, capacity building, and resources necessary to help select municipalities recover from the pandemic and thrive for years to come. As outlined by the language in the governor's budget and brief, $5 million of total project funding must support projects in Atlantic City. The remaining $5 million will support projects in Newark, which experienced the largest loss in commuter foot traffic during the pandemic, as prior to March 2020, the city reported a daytime commuter downtown population of over 120,000 people. To assist Atlantic City and Newark, ART establishes a competitive grant program that will provide $9.75 million in total funding for the creation of two programs, one for real estate rehabilitation and development and one for public space activation. The $9.75 million will be split evenly among Newark and Atlantic City, with each municipality receiving $4.875 million for programming. ART's real estate rehabilitation development program will account for up to 70% of the total funding to support project-specific hard and soft costs that revitalize commercial corridors and incentivize catalytic development. ART's public space activation program will account for 30% of the total program funding to support public space activation initiatives such as placemaking, events, public art installations, signage, streetscape improvements, and small business supports. This pilot program is the first funding tranche of $25 million allocated by Governor Murphy to support economic development activities in New Jersey's commercial corridors. By making new, impactful, and strategic investments into commuter hub cities through real estate development and public space activation, the EDA will help promote strong, resilient, and equitable economic recoveries in municipalities most impacted by COVID-19. With that, I'll open up to any questions.
Any questions for Emma? If we have no questions for Emma, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Angela.
Thank you, Rob. Can I get a second?
Dragon. Second.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right. Thank you, Emma. Next item is New Jersey MVP, the Manufacturer Voucher Program. Ivan Mendez, Senior Product Officer, Tax Credit Programs, presenting. Ivan, take it away.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the board. Today, the members are asked to approve the creation of NJMVP, New Jersey Manufacturing Voucher Program, a pilot program that will provide New Jersey manufacturers a grant to access equipment they need to become more efficient, productive, and profitable. Also, the utilization of $20 million from the Fiscal Year 2023 Appropriations Act to capitalize the NJMVP program. The utilization of $1 million of that $20 million funding is to be used by the authority to cover administrative costs that are needed to administer the NJMVP New Jersey Manufacturing Voucher Program. Lastly, delegation of authority to the Chief Executive Officer to approve certain individual applications for the NJMVP within the parameters set forth in this memo and the attached program specifications. On June 30th, 2022, Governor Murphy signed the Fiscal Year 2023 Appropriations Act into law. The act allocates significant state funding for numerous strategic economic development investments to support key industries, including $35 million for Manufacturing Industry Initiative to grow and strengthen the state's manufacturing sector. $20 million from that bucket is being used for the creation of the New Jersey Manufacturing Voucher Program. New Jersey Manufacturers Voucher Program will provide equipment grants valued at 30 to 50% of the cost of the eligible equipment, including insulation, up to a maximum award of $250,000. The program will target the state's manufacturers within targeted industries and offer bonuses focused on certified women, minority, and veteran-owned businesses, opportunity zones, purchasing manufacturing equipment in New Jersey, as well as bonuses for companies that have a collective bargaining agreement in place. NJMVP is also committed to supporting small businesses by awarding manufacturers with under 100 FTE higher award percentages. In order for applicants to be eligible, the applicant company must be in a targeted industry. You'll find the list and definitions in Appendix B. A company must obtain a tax clearance certificate. The equipment must be located and installed at a New Jersey location, and the applicant must provide purchase quote, order pro forma, and or equipment listing. It's important to know, however, that projects where a contract has been signed, a purchase order placed, or a deposit made in advance of submitting an MVP application will not be considered for funding. We're looking forward rather than backwards. For-profit and not-for-profit companies are eligible, but home-based businesses are not. We're also including new and or used equipment as part of the program. Equipment must be used in the manufacturing process, and total aggregated project cost, which is equipment plus insulation, must be at least $25,000. All contracts, including manufacturer supplier agreements that are $2,000 or more and require installation of equipment, is subject to prevailing wage law. As stated earlier, there are bonus opportunities for applicants that also support the authority's diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts. There are stackable 5% bonuses available for each of the following: opportunity zone eligible census tracts, certified women, minority, and veteran-owned businesses, and at least one collective bargaining agreement in place. There's also a stackable 10% bonus for companies that purchase equipment from a New Jersey manufacturer, and equipment must be manufactured or and it assembled here in New Jersey. Funding can only be used for purchase and installation of new and or used equipment used in the manufacturing process. Applications will be received on a rolling basis, and the application period will remain open until all funds are committed. Lastly, there's also a non-refundable application fee of $1,000, as well as a three-year recapture provision. In closing, I'm recommending that the members of the board approve the creation of the NJMVP New Jersey Manufacturers Voucher Program, a pilot program that will provide New Jersey manufacturers a grant to access equipment they need to become more efficient, productive, and profitable. Also, the utilization of $20 million from the Fiscal Year 2023 Appropriations Act to capitalize the NJMVP New Jersey Manufacturing Voucher Program. The utilization of $1 million of the $20 million funding is to be used by the authority to cover administrative costs that are needed to administer the NJMVP. Also, delegation of authority to the Chief Executive Officer to approve certain individual applications for the NJMVP in accordance with the parameters set forth in this memo and attached program specs. Thank you, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you. I got 30 seconds of just commentary on that. So, one, great job, exciting, and great job to Matt, who's been leading the charge on this as well. This is the first time we've had a program specifically for manufacturers, particularly small, you know, in-state incumbent manufacturers. We hear, you know, a critique we hear all the time, hey, you got lots of programs for big companies. Actually, you have lots for small companies, too, but we don't have
anything that is purpose-driven for manufacturers who want to upgrade their equipment, who face competitive threats from, you know, places that don't have the same commitment, say, to organized labor that we do in New Jersey, or that have different, you know, cost comparisons compared to other places. How do we help? This is sort of the home team here, and this is a purpose-built home team support program that Governor Murphy and the legislature, you know, put into the budget, and very purposely meant to help, you know, keep our manufacturing sector, which has been one of the unsung heroes of the COVID recovery, on its front foot and strong, and be able to compete for some of the opportunities in things like offshore wind. When you've got a big, you know, global OEMs coming to town, they have very demanding specs for what they purchase and who they'll use in their supply chain. This is designed to be used, provide funding to help folks kind of get up the value chain if they need to, and hit the gym, if you will, and get ready for those big opportunities. So, timely, important, innovative, new, and impactful. So pretty good. Good job on that.
Great. Do you have any other questions for Ivan?
Yes. First of all, this is fantastic. Like Tim says, that is focused on manufacturing. Just real quick, I'm sorry for naivete. Bonuses, are that for in the scoring or financial bonuses in the award?
It's financial. Okay. So based on the project cost.
Great. Awesome.
A bigger award.
Right. Very great. And then secondly, on the recaptures, is that standard? You know, 1 year 100, 2 year 60. I mean.
No, it's not standard, but we found it important to put in some sort of recapture in an effort to make sure that these companies, the award we're giving them, it's being taken advantage of here in New Jersey.
Great, thank you. It's a bit of a, you know, when we were doing the small business grants during the peak of COVID, there was not, I mean, there was fraud we could recapture, but like we weren't going to check 2 years later to make sure you were still selling pizza. Like that's just not the nature of that exercise. These are bigger grants. These are meant to be more competitive, strategically deployed. So there's a bit of a compliance tail here. Nothing wrong with selling
pizza. Other questions? If we have no other questions for Ivan, can I get a motion to approve?
Brad Dumont making a motion.
Brad, can I get a second?
Aisha Glover, second.
Thank you, Aisha. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions?
Great.
Thank you, Ivan.
Thank you.
Oh, we're moving on to the most exciting. We're on the modification to the hurdle rate model.
Yes.
Get those HP12Cs out, folks. We'll have some fun with this one because we have the greatest voice in New Jersey, David Lawyer, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting.
Thank you.
Right. Only you can make this sound good.
I will try. In November 2012, the members of the ADA board approved the use of a new hurdle rate model created for the authority by Jones Lang LaSalle. Later in December of that same year, the members approved a modification to the model that had functionality needed in the review of incentive applications. The model was primarily used to determine the maximum internal rate of return for projects seeking assistance under the former ERG program. The model calculates the maximum return based on key characteristics, which includes the project zip code, industry class, and the degree to which location is in an area of economic disadvantage. As the memo explains, the model contains comparable return information used to calculate an average or interpolated hurdle rate based on various user inputs. These returns are sourced from Real Capital Analytics, a global research and consulting firm with offices in New York City, San Jose, and London. The data from Real Capital does not contain an adequate number of returns specific to historic property and brownfield redevelopment projects. To bridge this gap, JLL proposes the use of multipliers. The simple logic behind multipliers is that they will adjust the returns already calculated by the model to be relevant to a historic preservation or brownfield redevelopment project. The multiplier will be applied to the base hurdle rate generated by the model for each application under the brownfield and historic programs to determine the hurdle rate applicable for that project. All return information built into the model will be updated semi-annually to ensure the hurdle rates calculated reflect prevailing market conditions. In conclusion, it's recommended that the hurdle rate model be modified to add this functionality in the form of multipliers to accommodate applications under the historic and brownfield redevelopment programs. It is also requested that a future multiplier spur the appropriate method to update the model to accommodate new EDA programs. EDA staff may proceed with those modifications without seeking board action.
Thank you. All right. Could you talk about the weather now?
Back from the
so don't worry. Just two steps.
Okay. Oh, good. Super fix. Do we have any questions for David? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Motion.
Thank you. Can I get a second?
Yep, one second.
Great. Thank you, Noreen. Any discussions? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Great. Thank you, David. next item is the Jersey City Lowe's. QALICB LLC is the applicant, and the Jersey City Economic Development Corporation co-applicant, the Lowe's New Jersey Theater Rehabilitation Project. Adina Milstead, Director of Historic Preservation, presenting.
Good morning. I am here to request approval of a tax credit award in the not-to-exceed amount of $42,272,559.90. To the Jersey City Lowe's QALICB LLC applicant and Jersey City Economic Development Corporation co-applicant to the Historic Property Reinvestment Program for the Lowe's Jersey City Theater Rehabilitation Project. Transformative projects under the program can receive a tax credit worth up to 45% of eligible project costs, up to a maximum of $50 million, with a final award based on the project's actual eligible cost upon project completion. The project that's being presented here today meets the eligibility requirements under the program for a transformative project. The Historic Property Reinvestment Program is a tax credit program designed to work in conjunction with the Federal Historic Tax Credit and focuses on historic preservation as a component of community development. The HPRP is a competitive program, so all applications are submitted during a pre-established application window and reviewed following the closure of this application period. Rules for the program were approved by this board earlier this year in February. After that approval, the authority announced two application windows for calendar year 2022, one for transformative projects from March 24th to June 7th, and one for regular projects from June 15th to August 15th. During the window for transformative projects, we received one application, which is the one being presented here today. We also received four applications under the regular project window, and those applications are currently under review, and any award recommendations will be brought to the board at a later date. Now, so some general project information. The project involves the rehabilitation of an existing historic theater to be used as live performance, movie theater, and entertainment venue. The total project estimated project cost is $110,796,491, and with estimated eligible project cost at $93,939.22. Upon completion, the theater is anticipated to host around 150 events a year, with additionally several community programming events. The Lowe's Theater project will be conducted in two distinct phases of construction, so they will have a period of up to 60 months to complete the project. Specifically, the schedule submitted by the application shows a project duration of 673 workdays. Basically, based on that schedule, what it means that if rehabilitation agreement were to be executed in the first quarter of 2023, the first project phase will be completed in the fourth quarter of 2023, and a projected project completion will be in fourth quarter of 2025. It's important to highlight that the agreement, when the agreement is finalized and executed, is what starts the clock on the duration of the project. All applicants submitted on the program are reviewed and scored by a selection committee based on a pre-established scoring criteria, which was presented to the board earlier. The criteria focuses on five main themes, which are historic preservation, historic significance, imminent threat to the historic resource, project concept and team, status of site control, and impact on the surrounding neighborhood. The committee is comprised of a multidisciplinary team of professionals with experience in the field of historic preservation, construction, and project management. The five members of the committee included NJEDA staff, as well as professional staff from DEP's Historic Preservation Office and DCA's New Jersey Historic Trust. The individual score sheets from the selection committee were added up and averaged, resulting in a total final score of 66.3 out of a possible 100, therefore surpassing the required minimum score of 50. The application evaluation also included an underwriting review, which concluded that the applicant showed that they had adequate valid sources of funding to cover all the project costs to complete the project, and they demonstrated the ability to meet the program's 20% equity contribution. They demonstrated that a financing gap existed, and the pro forma submitted shows that activity of the theater will generate enough income to cover all operating expenses once the project is completed. Additionally, a third-party independent feasibility analysis submitted as part of the application was reviewed and found to be satisfactory. Additional detailed information on the underwriting as well as the rest of the review is included in the memo, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Adita?
This is a really exciting one, too. Obviously, it's our first. It's the first time around the track on the historic program in general, and to have a transformative be first is incredible. Really exciting project in Jersey City. This is, I think, the legitimately lowercase T transformational in addition to being in the capital T transformational program. So it's really exciting.
I just have one question. It's not specific to this project, but minimum scoring.
Yeah.
You know, some programs have a minimum score of 65. This program has a minimum score of 50.
This may show off my very anal tendencies. I don't know that I should be doing this in a public forum, but we basically came up with a list of criteria that we were looking at and then looked at, tabulated all kinds of different possibilities, looking at a different possibilities of projects that could come in. Taking into account, like we have, for example, one of the criteria, so the criteria is threat to the resource. And we wanted to have that, for example, in case there was two projects being equal and we were oversubscribed, that maybe the project that it was in threat of being lost is the one that would get money over the other one. But we wanted to make sure that a building that had been neglected would not be going over a building that was more significant and the like. So we basically looked at all the numbers and ran all kinds of different possibilities and came up to that number at what seemed to be the right sweet spot to get to.
So our minimums are kind of program specific, correct?
Yes.
Okay, great. And that's all I have. Any other questions?
Can I get a motion to approve?
Dragon, motion to approve.
Elizabeth, can I get a second? Robert Shimko. Thank you, Robert. Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, let's go to the next item. Proposed new rules for the Brownfields Redevelopment Incentive Program. Elizabeth Limbrick, Director of Brownfields and Sustainable Systems, presenting. Elizabeth.
Thank you, Chairman. It's a pleasure to be presenting this. I want to thank everyone that helped. There were many internal departments as well as significant collaboration with DEP as well as the Attorney General's Office. So before you is a board memo for the creation of the Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive Program that was established through the Economic Recovery Act of 2020. The program is funded at $50 million per year for 6 years through the Economic Recovery Act for a total of $300 million. Unused funding can be rolled over to subsequent years, and this will allow staff to start off with $150 million in awards and will be done through competitive rounds, which will be announced at a later time to the public. The program, per the statute, uses the definition of redevelopment project, which can mean a remediation-only project. This is really especially important as the tax credit only funds remediation activities. It should be noted that we will allow both remediation-only projects as well as larger redevelopment projects, which may include your more traditional redevelopment with vertical construction. So when we designed the program, we thought about both types of projects. The program, per the statute, will support applicants with really two types of awards. First, you have what's available really throughout the state, which is awards of up to 50% of remediation costs with a cap of $4 million. For those projects, the equity contribution is 20%. And then in keeping with Governor Murphy's vision for inclusive economic growth, there is a larger incentive for projects that are located in government-restricted municipalities and qualified incentive tracts. For those projects, they're eligible for up to 60% of the remediation costs, up to a maximum of $8 million, and the equity contribution for those projects has been reduced to 10%. This is really important because it's going to support getting money into these distressed communities, remediating those problems that we created in the past, and really building a better foundation for the future. The program is designed as a one-time tax credit. It's issued when the developer completes remediation, and that is as certified by the Department of Environmental Protection. Additionally, the developer may transfer the tax credit, but only one time. The program is competitive. So just like you heard with historic, this means the authority will announce a defined application window period, and then the developers must apply within that time frame. All applications will be considered following the closure of that application period, and then applications will be reviewed and scored with the top-ranked projects presented to board for approval. It's envisioned that all projects in a specific round will go to board at the same time, as this is a competitive program. The developer will have 1 year from that board approval to enter into a redevelopment agreement with the authority. And they will have 6 years from board approval to complete the remediation and redevelopment project. At the end of remediation, they will have 1 year to seek a certification from DEP that the remediation is complete and that the costs were actually and reasonably incurred. And they will also, of course, need to provide submittals to EDA showing the redevelopment project is complete. After EDA's approval, taxation will issue the tax credit. A few key features of the program and some eligibility criteria. First, the site has to be, of course, a brownfield site. And that definition limits it to properties that are either former or current commercial or industrial sites. Projects also need to have a letter of support from the governing body. And as with other EDA programs, they must demonstrate that the project would not be economically feasible without the tax credit. And then given that this program is really intended to incentivize redevelopment projects that would not be possible without these tax credits, the statute requires that the project must demonstrate the existence of a project financing gap and that the tax credit award that is being considered is equal to or less than that project financing gap. So that project financing gap analysis will include an evaluation of the total cost of remediation, the amount of capital sufficient to complete the remediation, and the reasonable and appropriate return on investment. The reasonable and appropriate rate of return on investment will be evaluated using the authority's current hurdle rate model, which you just heard David Lawyer present earlier in this meeting. If within 4 years of completion of the redevelopment project, a developer were to sell, lease, or sublease the brownfield site, we would then determine if their developer's rate of return exceeded what was considered and deemed to be reasonable and appropriate at board approval. If it does in fact exceed that, the developer would then pay up to 20% of the amount of the excess profit. More information is provided in Appendix B on how we will be administering this reasonable rate of return analysis. Next, the applicant cannot be in any way responsible or liable for the discharge at the site. Although this statutory provision may exclude some property owners because the implications of liability under the New Jersey Spill Act, developers that are either leasing the site or have a purchase sale agreement that might close after the remediation is complete would be eligible as long as they didn't in any other way become responsible or liable for the contamination at the site. While prior investment assessment and investigation is allowed and costs for these activities incurred up to 24 months prior to application may be included as eligible costs, the applicant cannot start cleanup activities prior to the application unless they certify that they could not have reasonably known the full extent of the contamination prior to starting that remediation. And then additionally, costs must be considered reasonable. So we are requiring cost estimates at the time of application, and DEP will be conducting a cost reasonableness review prior to board approval. And then again, at the end of the project, they will conduct a review of the cost to determine that they were actually and reasonably incurred. Remediation costs are defined as all reasonable costs associated with remediation except for property acquisition costs, financing of the remediation, legal fees, incentive consultant fees, and authority fees. Payments for penalties and violations are also excluded from this program. However, DEP remediation program fees and permit fees are eligible costs. As with other EDA programs, the developer must be in good standing with our sister agencies, with Department of Labor and Workforce Development, with Department of Environmental Protection, and with Treasury. The rules that are attached also require that the redevelopment project pay prevailing wage for construction work, which does include remediation work, for the duration of the project, as well as prevailing wage for building services workers until 10 years following the completion of the redevelopment project. This requirement also applies to subsequent owners, occupants, and lessees. The program includes a requirement that the redevelopment project meet minimum environmental and sustainability standards, and staff is currently developing a specific minimum environmental and sustainability standards guide for remediation, and we anticipate things like demolition, recycling, and soil reuse would be included in that manual. Additionally, this program has a requirement for a labor harmony agreement under circumstances where the state has a proprietary interest in the redevelopment project. Moving on to scoring. Authority staff have consulted with NJDEP to develop the evaluation criteria for the competitive application process. If the program is oversubscribed within a given round, only the top scorers would proceed for board approval. The program also utilizes a minimum score approach to assess whether a proposed redevelopment project is consistent with the objectives, goals, and principles of the Brownfield Redevelopment Incentive Program. As this tax credit is issued at time of completion of the remediation and a developer is not required to include construction as part of the redevelopment project, no post-remediation redevelopment, whether included as part of the redevelopment project or as a vision for a subsequent redevelopment project, will be included in the scoring. Rather, we will be looking at items that are verifiable at the time of application, things like site location designations and land use will be considered. Because the statute states that the following factors may be considered, the scoring matrix will evaluate a project's economic feasibility, the benefit to the community, job creation and economic development, reduction of environmental or public health stressors in an overburdened community, and we also added a diversity as a factor for scoring. And I think this is a really important factor that was added to the program, and we worked very closely with the authorities, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Department to develop this criterion. Definitions for diverse and representative of the community are included in the rules and are very specific to this program. The program will consider diversity of owners and board of directors or partners or members if there are no board of directors that exist. To receive the full points for the category, the applicant will need to include identity self-certification forms, information on the percentage of ownership held by each diverse owner, and an explanation on how current board members or partners or members are representative of the community. NJEDA's Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Department will evaluate and score applications for this specific category. And Appendix C has more information on scoring. A few other items to note about the tax credit. It can be transferred in increments as low as $25,000. Again, it's a one-time only transfer, but they can break it into multiple pieces as low as $25,000. There's a floor for the tax credit transfer of 85 cents on the dollar, except for certain projects which include federal low-income housing tax credits, and those may actually qualify for a reduction to 75 cents on the dollar. The tax credit cannot be carried forward and is not refundable. A little information on forfeiture and recapture. There are several scenarios where a tax credit may be recaptured, and the authority will recapture and the developer will forfeit the tax credit if the developer has made material misrepresentation. They also may forfeit or we may recapture if the developer fails to submit reports on time without extenuating circumstances or extensions, if they fail to meet the building services and construction prevailing wage requirements, if they fail to meet sister agency review, or fail to meet other requirements as detailed in the proposed new rules. Importantly, in the event of recapture, the authority will recapture from the developer and not from the purchaser or assignee of the tax credit transfer certificate. On the rulemaking process, the Economic Recovery Act authorizes the authority to promulgate special adoption rules for the program, which will be effective immediately upon filing with the Office of Administrative Law and will continue for 360 days. Additionally, staff requests approval for concurrent publication of the proposed rules, which would include a 60-day public comment period. I wanted to note as well that EO 63 public listening sessions were held on September 7th and 8th, and there were no comments that resulted in any changes to the rules. The Chief Compliance Officer has reviewed the rules and is prepared to sign the certification for submission to publish the rules in the New Jersey Register. Moving on to fees. Prior to establishing the proposed fee structure, authority staff conducted an internal review to estimate the likely administrative costs to the authority to administer this program, and staff also sought to align the fees with other Economic Recovery Act programs where feasible. In particular, we considered the fees for Aspire, Emerge, and Historic Preservation. We developed a tiered structure with small projects of up to $5 million and large projects being over $5 million. The fees are included in the memo. I do not want to read all of those to you, but the required fees for projects would include an application fee, which is $2,000 for small, $7,000 for large, approval fee, $5,000 for small, $15,000 for large, and a tax credit issuance fee, $5,000 for small, and $15,000 for large. We also included fees for activities which are optional and may not apply to every project, things like tax credit transfer, major and minor modifications, as well as extensions. We are asking for delegated authority for extensions, and that's because brownfield remediations do have a greater risk of schedule delays due to the inherent uncertainties that impact timing, and because the statute does not impose a specific deadline on the completion of the redevelopment project, staff is requesting delegated authority for the CEO to approve up to 4 6-month extensions consistent with the authority's delegation policy. Specifically, this request is for delegated authority for the CEO and or his or her subdelegates to approve up to 4 6-month extensions for progress reports and annual reports for the completion of the redevelopment project and for submission of documents evidencing the completion of remediation and for projects that do include that post-remediation redevelopment, the redevelopment project as well. Additional extension requests will be presented to the board. Additionally, staff is requesting the addition of this program to the existing incentive delegated authority for certain minor administrative changes and for extensions to conditions of approval. The statute also requires that a state, college, or university prepare a report on the implementation and effectiveness of the program, and this report will be submitted to the authority, the governor, the legislature, and then the authority will prepare a written response to the report. So with that, we are requesting that the members authorize staff to submit the special adopted new rules and concurrent proposed program rules for promulgation in the New Jersey Register, and submit the proposed program rules as final adopted rules for promulgation in the Register if no formal comments are received, subject to final review and approval by the Office of Attorney General and Office of Administrative Law. The members are also asked to approve delegation of authority to the CEO and or his or her subdelegate in accordance with the authority's delegation policy. Again, that's to establish the dates for each competitive round of funding, to add the brownfield redevelopment incentive to existing delegated authority for certain minor administrative changes and extensions to conditions of approval, and to approve up to those 4 6-month extensions to the dates by when either a progress report or annual report is due, when the redevelopment project must be completed, and when documents evidencing completion of remediation and the redevelopment project must be submitted. Finally, the members are asked to approve the creation of the Brownfields Redevelopment Incentive Program as initially authorized by the New Jersey Economic Recovery Act of 2020. Thank you.
We'll take a quiz on that at the end.
Any questions for Elizabeth? We have no questions for Elizabeth. Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Dragon, motion to approve.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Can I get a second?
Second, Marcia.
Any discussion? All in favor, aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Great. Thank you, Elizabeth.
Shout out to DEP, Commissioner Lazaret. Elizabeth is on the phone. Brownfield redevelopment is a sort of a joint venture between DEP and EDA and great partners and all this. So deeply appreciate the launch of this exciting program.
All right. The next segment of our agenda is related to the Director's Loan Review Committee. Marcia Marley is our chair. Marcia, would you like to say a few words before we dive into the agenda?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman. First, I want to say I may be the only one here that loves the discussion on internal rates of return. The Director's Loan Review Committee met on September 28th to review two bond items. I want to thank the staff for making it so brief, our book, and it was the meeting that we've had so far. These items are now in front of the board for approval. The first is the issuance of tax-exempt bonds for Cornell Institute for Medical Research to relocate its headquarters and construct and develop an innovation and science campus. The second item was the adoption of written post-issuance compliance procedures and other matters with respect to the authorities, transportation project, sublease, revenue bonds, and New Jersey Transit Transportation Project Bonds 2017-2020. Chairman, I now turn it back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Marcia. All right. The first item is a preliminary approval item for Cornell Institute for Medical Research, proceeds for a standalone bond in the amount of roughly $46 million. David Laurier, Managing Director, Underwriting, presenting.
David. Thank you. Established in 1953, Cornell Institute for Medical Research is a biobank and laboratory providing biospecimens to researchers and scientists. The company manages a diverse collection of cell lines, DNA, and other biomaterials gathered and distributed for use by the international biomedical research community. Cornell is currently located at 403 Haddon Avenue, Camden, New Jersey. Cornell is seeking tax-exempt bond financing to relocate its headquarters and construct a new innovation and science campus. The company will be relocating its corporate office from Haddon Avenue in Camden to a larger, newly constructed facility also in Camden. The applicant will retain its 125 employees and anticipates hiring an additional 40 full-time employees. As mentioned, this request is for preliminary approval only. Once financing and design, among other things, have been finalized, it'll be back here in front of you for final.
Great. Thank you, David. Do we have any questions for David? If we have no questions for David, can I get a motion to approve?
So moved, Angela.
Thank you, Rob. Can I get a second?
Marcia.
Thank you, Marcia. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? All right, the next item is the adoption of written post-issuance compliance procedures with respect to the authorities' transportation project sublease revenue bonds. 2017 Series A. There's a long description here, but yeah. Lori Zaccarella, Program Manager of Bond Compliance, will tell us what's important.
Yes.
Thank you, Lori.
This request is seeking the board's approval to memorialize current roles and responsibilities pertaining to post-issuance tax compliance best practices for both the 2017 Series A and B and 2020 Series A New Jersey Transit Corporation bonds. The request has been vetted through our project review and direct loan review committee meetings and has been made in coordination with and the direction from the New Jersey State Treasurer and the Attorney General's Office. Tri-C, Shannon, and Giacomasi, B.C. Bond Council has also reviewed all documents. This request is strictly administrative as no changes are being made to the bonds themselves. Happy to answer any questions you may have.
like that. Any questions for Lori?
Short flight, on time.
That's right. Eat up for last two.
Can I get MVP? Can I get a motion to approve?
So moved.
Thank you, Rob. Can I get a second?
Give him a second.
Thank you, Noreen. Any more discussion? All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals, abstentions? Great. Thank you, Lori.
Thank you.
All right. The next next item on our agenda is a real estate item. I'll have our chair of our real estate committee, Charles Sarlo, make a few comments. Charles.
Thank you, Chair. The Real Estate Committee did meet on September 28, 2022 to discuss the one item on the agenda before the board members this morning, and that is with regard to the New Jersey Bioscience Center in North Brunswick, and it's the restatement and an amended lease agreement with Acida Pharmaceuticals, if I pronounce that correctly, for some additional space in the BioCenter.
Great. All right. So this is just what Charles was saying. The New Jersey BioCenter at North Brunswick, the amended and restated lease agreement with Ascendia Pharmaceuticals. Juan Burgos, Vice President of Real Estate Development, presenting. Juan, good to see you. Are you warm this morning?
I am. Did you come in with the top down this morning?
I did not. No, that car is getting fixed.
We're requesting the members to approve an amended restated lease with Ascendia Pharmaceuticals, Inc. for the entirety of Building 2 at the New Jersey Bioscience Center, which is approximately 59,558 square feet, which includes laboratory and office space. The term will be for 11 years, 9 months, 141 months, and will include 2 5-year extensions that can be exercised at the tenant's option. Formed in 2012, Ascendia is a privately held company formed by Jim Huang. Prior to forming Ascendia, Mr. Huang worked in pharmaceutical research, development, and management at Pfizer, Baxter, AstraZeneca, and Roche. The firm itself provides formulation, analytical, and manufacturing services to pharmaceutical companies working collaboratively to provide innovative solutions to challenging drug delivery problems and to create advances in medicine. Since occupying space in the incubator, Ascendia has grown from 3 full-time employees at the center to 40 full-time employees currently, and has plans to grow to about 63 employees within the next 4 years. Just to summarize the lease, in May 2017, Ascendia moved in and occupied a portion of Building 2, approximately 15,290 square feet, and through various lease amendments, its space has increased to 22,698 square feet. Currently, in the other portion of the building that's separate and apart, they're connected by common area, is a lease with AbbVie, and Ascendia has essentially entered into sublease with AbbVie, and they're leasing 31,962 square feet. The AbbVie lease, which is in Allegan, AbbVie owns Allegan. The sublease and the Allegan lease terminate on the same date, January 31st, 2023. The terms of the lease will be 141 months with the option of 2 5-year renewals that can be exercised by the tenant. There will be 3 months of net rent abatement during the term upon completion of the landlord and tenant work, which I'll briefly describe. The rentable space at the initial lease term will include 27,596,000 square feet, and part of that portion of that 27,000 is 5,031 square feet of unfinished premises. The lease will expand to 32,962 square feet on February 1st when the Allegan lease terminates and the sublease that Ascendia has with AbbVie lease terminates. The net rent over the term be undiscounted about $24.914 million over the 141 months, and so the starting rent in the occupied space that Ascendia has with us now is about $30.14 a square foot. when the unfinished premises comes online, it'll be $31.04 a square foot, and when the 32,962 square feet lease portion comes online at the end of the Allegan lease, that space will be at $32.50 a square foot. The lease, the rent will increase annually on the commencement date at 3%. So we're providing Ascendia about $1.3 million in various pots. There's landlord work to be done in the unfinished premises. That space has no slab. That space has no slab, and it has some tanks in the back that need to be removed from a prior tenant. So we provided Ascendia with $200,000 allowance to complete that work so it would be incorporated in their finished product when they finish that space. That work has to be completed within 18 months of lease execution. In addition, we've provided $1.113 million that's allocated as follows. In the unfinished premises, the 5,000 square feet, we provided about $384,000 of tenant fit-out allowance. In the premises that are they currently occupy, we provide about $442,000 of tenant fit-out allowance. And in the new, in the wing that is they currently sublease from Allegan, we've provided about $288,000 of fit-out allowance, and they all have to be spent within certain periods within the lease. The security deposit will be in the form of a revocable letter of credit that will be transferable, and initially it will start, it will be sized at the initial value of the letter of credit, about $856,000, will be sized at the proportion of the space that they're occupying. When the Allegan space comes online on 2/1/2023, it will grow from $856,000 to $1.86 million, which is, takes into account the additional 32,000 square feet more that's added. In addition, in months 40, 54, 72, and 80 of the lease, the letter of credit can be decreased if the tenant meets certain financial milestones regarding gross revenue and net revenue by producing audited financial statements. So the financial analysis of the lease on an undiscounted net rent basis, when you amortize landlord work, tenant work, and the broker's commission, the undiscounted value of the lease is about $21.8 million. The net present value in today's dollars as of 12/31, that's about $15.9 million. And the average rent of the lease after you take into account the amortization of the tenant work, man work, and the broker's commission is about $28.53. Yeah.
Questions for Juan? Do we have no questions for Juan? Can I get a motion to approve? Rob, can I get a second?
Creating seconds.
Marlene, any more discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any recusals or abstentions? All right. Last item here before public comment, non-voting item. From Sullivan presenting board memoranda.
Great. We have one delegated authority memo in your packets related to Juan and his team, real estate division delegated authority, business and rights of entry. I won't go through this in any detail, happy to answer any questions, but it is a good reminder. A ton happens here at these meetings, and a ton happens in between meetings and behind the scenes that keeps the staff and team busy. So deep appreciation to the real estate team for everything they do. Sometimes it's high profile like we were just describing. Sometimes it's a little bit more blocking and tackling like what's in this memo. All important though. People appreciate their work.
Great. Thank you, Tim. Now I'd like to open the public comment portion of the meeting. First of all, I'll have Daniel Esser read the NJEDA's public comment policy and process for this telephonic board meeting. Danielle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As stated in NJEDA's public comment policy, members of the public who wish to speak during the public comment portion of the meeting and who have registered to speak will be acknowledged to speak first during the public comment portion. members attending the meeting, members of the public attending the meeting by phone who are interested in providing public comment can press 1, then 0 on your phone to be registered to speak, which will place each person into a queue based on the order received. We'll go over NJEDA's public comment policy at this time, which is also available on the NJEDA website. Each speaker will be prompted to speak one at a time. Each speaker should announce his or her name, organization, affiliation, and the topic on which the remarks will be given. Each speaker will have a maximum of 3 minutes to speak and should limit their comments to matters pertaining to the authority. Staff will prompt the speaker once their time has expired, and a speaker may not register to speak more than once during the same public comment period to ensure there's enough time available for all of those who wish to speak. And speakers may provide related documents, printed comments, or materials attached to an email. We look forward to receiving your public comments at this time.
I'd like to acknowledge any members of the public who've registered to speak in person. I'm not aware of any. Are there other members of the public who would wish to provide public comment? Operator, anyone out there?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Lois. Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, please press 1, then 0 on your telephone keypad. You may withdraw your question at any time by repeating the 1-0 command. And if you're using a speakerphone, please pick up the handset before pressing the number. Once again, if you have a comment, please press 1, then 0. One moment, please. And at this time, we have no one queuing up.
Great. All right. Thank you, operator. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. I'd now like to make a motion to enter executive session to discuss a real estate matter where there is potential litigation, the meetings of which will become available when the need for confidentiality no longer exists. Operator.
Thank you. One moment.
We need to have the
second. The board will now be entering.
Oh, I need a second?
Yes.
I thought I could. Okay. Can I get a second to go into executive session?
Second.
Thank you, Rob. Any discussion? All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any recusals? Abstentions? All right. Thank you. Thank you, Gabe.
Thank you. And the board will now enter executive session. For members of the public, you may hold on the line. Board members and staff will return to this line when executive session has concluded.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the phone lines, please continue to hold the line. We will return from the executive session shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, we do appreciate your patience. Please continue to hold the line. We should rejoin the executive session shortly. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. We should be rejoining from the executive session shortly. Please continue to hold. Ladies and gentlemen, please continue to hold the line. We should be joining the executive session back shortly. Please continue to hold. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your patience. Your conference should resume shortly. Please continue to hold.
Open the door, the public floods in.
And we are back into public session.
Danielle coming back. If there are no additional comments, I'd like to thank everyone for their participation. I'll now make a motion to adjourn. Can I get a second?
Stay for a second.
Second. Thank you, Noreen. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you, everybody. Conclude our meeting.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, and that does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for your participation and for using AT&T conferencing service. You may now.